time of responding to the Lord and His goodness. We're about to dismiss for Discovery Club. Let me just say before that one of the high privileges is a baptismal service in the body. Just hearing the testimonies is marvelous. We could stop. It would have been a very full and good day. We'll dismiss now kids and workers who are going to Discovery Club, and the rest of us will be putting in again in Joshua. If you're visiting, haven't been here before, my name is David Zinn, and I typically speak the last Sunday of the month, so it's a little more disjointed between times. But we're in the study of the book of Joshua, a historical narrative telling us about the life of the nation of Israel. Rich truth, many examples for us to look at and grab hold of. In fact, I hope that in your life you are encouraged by the example of others who live godly lives. Our text today will deal with and maybe confront us a bit with the issue of following God fully. Sometimes the best definition of what that means is conveyed through examples. We need godly examples of men and women who are devoted to following Him fully without even stopping to count the cost. Sometimes we have godly examples that are widely and well known. As I prepared this, my mind drifted to a family that was not well known when their deeds were done, but one of their members became extremely well known as she told about them later, and that's the Ten Boom family and Corey Ten Boom. They were a very ordinary Dutch family. Corey Ten Boom's father was a watchmaker. She became a watchmaker. But when she and her family became aware of the persecution in the Netherlands of Jews by the Germans, you're familiar with the story. They began taking Jews in, hiding them in their home from the Germans. It was at great risk. They were able to do it for a couple of years until the Nazis became aware of what the family was doing, and they were arrested and imprisoned. Corey and her sister Betsy were ultimately put in a concentration camp and then a death camp, where Betsy died shortly before Corey was released. However, all of the Jews they sheltered survived, save one elderly woman. It was a family that in those actions in the 1940s in the Netherlands were following God fully with what was there for them to do. We know them. You've read the stories of that family. More often, though, there are those who have followed God fully whose names are not widely known. They're not books written about them. In fact, Patty and I often marvel at a woman in our age bracket whose life hasn't been easy in a number of ways. But she took on, at our age, the responsibility of raising three young grandchildren. Nobody else was there to be able to do it, for them to have a godly home, nurture and love. She stepped up. Few resources. It's emotional to even think about it, because I love her example. But she's been faithful and steadfast. That's where she was. That's what fell to her. She embraced it. To follow God fully for her meant accepting a responsibility and a burden.
At a time, many would say, I've done that. I don't want to go round again. But the Lord will honor those who honor him and follow him completely. We look today at a biblical example of a man whose lifetime, you're going to see, was devoted to following God fully. The account of his life really begins to be woven in, interestingly enough, as we hit the section of Joshua that the land is about to be dispersed and parceled out among the tribes. We're at chapter 14 in the book of Joshua. This is the section that begins this parceling out of the land among the tribes. The first five verses of chapter 14 are an introduction to this section and the distribution of the land that will go on through chapter 19. You remember that on the east side of the Jordan, 2.5 tribes have already received their lands. That's Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. So it's the rest of the tribes that are dealt with in these sections. We'll begin, just to give you a bit of an overview, Judah will be first. That'll be in chapter 15. Then Joseph's sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, will be dealt with in 16 and 17, and then the remaining seven tribes in 18 and 19. The process, though, begins in chapter 14 with a man we know as Caleb in 14:6 through 15, and it will end in chapter 19 with the inheritance Joshua received in Joshua 19:49 and 50. Just a little overview there. Let's see now the introduction to this that we get in our first five verses of chapter 14. Listen to what he writes. Following in your text. Now these are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel apportioned to them for an inheritance by the lot of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded through Moses for the nine tribes and the half a tribe. Well, as we do a little observation, we see who's involved in the distribution. It's Eleazar the priest. We have Joshua involved. And finally, the heads of households, the leaders, if you will, of the various tribes. This is the first time Eleazar the priest is mentioned in the book of Joshua. He was prominently mentioned in Numbers, especially at the commissioning of Joshua to succeed Moses. But the fact that Eleazar is involved in the distribution of the land indicates this was a sacred moment in the life of the nation. It's easy for us to run by this, but remember, God promised Abraham. Abram then, Genesis 12, the land, the seed, and a blessing. They are now getting the land all these years later, divided among the 12 tribes, the 12 sons, if you will, that are to inherit it. As to the method of distribution among these that are left on the west side, it is by lot. In Numbers 26, the Lord spoke to Moses and to Eleazar and told them to take a census of the sons of Israel from 20 years of age and up, looking for numbering the fighting men of Israel by tribe, men 20 years of age and up. When that was completed, the Lord spoke to Moses, this is Numbers 26:53, and said, among these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of the names. Going to be based on population. To the larger groups you shall increase their inheritance. And to the smaller group you shall diminish their inheritance. Each shall be given their inheritance according to those who were numbered of them. But the land shall be divided by lot. They shall receive their inheritance according to the names of the tribes of their fathers. According to the selection by lot, their inheritance shall be divided between the larger and the smaller groups. So you see in this passage back in Numbers two concepts. One, it's based on population. But even with that, the more get larger, the smaller get less. But then it's also determined by lot. How does that work? Well, nobody really knows exactly how that worked. Rabbinical tradition says there were two urns. And in one urn, they would draw out the name of the tribe. And then out of the other urn, they would draw out a description of land. And the two would be matched then that way. Then you go to the next tribe, the next land. Don't know exactly how that was done, but whatever was done, we know that God was superintending the amount each tribe was to receive. It was not equal portions. There were different sizes, and God allocated it that way. We'll see in the next three verses of chapter 14, as we go back there, how 13 tribes now, with Moses' two sons, were going to be divided, so it worked out 12 ways. For Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and the half-tribe beyond the Jordan, which we just mentioned, east side of the Jordan, but he did not give an inheritance to the Levites among them. For the sons of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. Joseph, getting the double portion Reuben should have had, but did not receive. And they did not give a portion to the Levites in the land except cities to live in, with the pasture lands for their livestock and for their property. Thus the sons of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they divided the land. So you had 2.5 on one side, you have 10.5 left for the other side, but the Levites will not get a section of land, if that makes sense. They'll get cities to live in where they can have their own flocks, but not a section of land laid out for them. It'll be cities within a section of land. So with that brief description of what's coming, we now turn to the allotment of the land. And we'll start with the tribe of Judah. But even as we do in chapter 14, the focus quickly shifts away from Judah to one man. Look with me as we begin this. His name is Caleb. We have not heard from him, really, in Joshua. The last we knew of Caleb, if you think back, was he was a spy. One of the 12 selected by Moses to go into the land when they're still in the wilderness at a place called Kadesh Barnea. And the 12 spies went out. Well, he's back now, as he and Joshua are the only two men of that generation which existed at that time as they were about to go into the land under Moses, but didn't, who survived and got to come into the land. Let's learn more about him now as we look at the remainder of chapter 14. Look with me at verse 6. Visualize this, if you will. Get kind of a mental picture here. The sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal. Now, Judah had, I'll get it wrong probably, maybe about 70,000 men in the census. By the way, the whole census was between nearly 700,000, 600,000 plus men over the age of 20. That's probably a congregation here of a couple million people or a little more. This is not Christ Fellowship getting together on Sunday afternoon. This is a big group. Judah is a large group. The sons of Judah, look what it says, drew near to Joshua in Gilgal. They're coming. They're ready to receive their land. And Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite said to him, he speaks up. He is a member of the tribe of Judah. Listen to what he says. You know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. So as they get there, all of a sudden, before anything starts, Caleb is raising his hand, or at least speaking out and saying, Joshua, you remember what the Lord said to Moses about the two of us back at Kadesh, there on the edge of the wilderness, back at that time. And he's described as Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. Now that's caused a little consternation among people, saying, well, in Genesis, back in Genesis 15:19, there's a reference to Kenizzites in the land, non-Jews. So is Caleb really a descendant of somebody other than Judah? And that's, as you might imagine, created some ink and paper on that subject. In reality, I don't think there's any problem here, but to better understand maybe his heritage, in Numbers 13, Caleb was chosen as the representative of the tribe of Judah to spy out the land. He was a member of the tribe of Judah, clearly. When that selection was made, listen to this in verse 1 of chapter 13. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. You shall send a man from each of the father's tribes, everyone a leader among them. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord, all of the men who were heads of the sons of Israel. These then were their names. And down in verse 6, from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. Now, he's clearly of that clan. This is an elect group. Out of the 2 million people, over 600,000 men, divided among these 12 tribes, 12 men were selected by Moses to go into the land. And of the tribe of Judah, the largest tribe, the selection was Caleb back at that time. David Howard, in his commentary on Joshua, says the simple solution about the Kenizzite is to remember that literally that term means son of Kenaz. Caleb's brother Othniel is called son of Kenaz in Joshua 15:17. So Caleb was probably a Kenizzite by virtue of being having a relative or ancestor bearing the name of Kenaz. One further thing, and I'll leave you with this sort of a footnote. In 1 Chronicles 4:15, Caleb, we're told, had a son named Elah. Elah had a son, Caleb's grandson, named Kenaz. So it's probably a family name that resulted in that being ascribed to him in this text. Let's go back to Joshua 14 and look at Caleb as he continues to speak to Joshua. Listen to what he says. Verse 7, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. Don't run by that too quickly. First, we get a timeline. Caleb was 40 years old when he was selected to be one of the 12. Moses commissioned him to do a job. He did it. That he is a man of integrity is seen from his report when he came back. He told Moses what he really believed. I spoke what was in my heart. I told you what I honestly believed and felt about this. He didn't offer the opinions of others as his own, and he was not swayed by what others said or did. Interesting, as you begin to piece elements of the character of this man together, Let's move on to verse 8 as he continues. Nevertheless, Caleb says, my brethren who went up with me, that's the 12, made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord my God fully. The others who went into the land with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear by what they said. Isn't it ironic? Do you remember Rahab? As Israel crosses the Jordan and the spies go into Jericho, do you remember what Rahab said? When we heard what God did in Egypt and to Sihon and Og over on the east side of the Jordan, our hearts melted with fear. They saw the power of God and melted with fear. And Caleb is recalling that moment when they came back and reported to Moses and Israel about the land. And he says, my colleagues caused the hearts of the people to melt with fear about this land, but I followed the Lord my God fully. Caleb continued to remind Joshua of what Moses said and why he said it. So look at verse 9 with me. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land upon which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now this is Moses' statement about Caleb. And he's saying, Moses said that the land I walked on would be my inheritance because, as Moses proclaimed it, he had followed the Lord his God fully. Interesting assessment by Moses. Caleb is spot on in his quote of Moses. Deuteronomy 1:36, which should be behind me, records what Moses said. The context is in connection with who will and who will not see the land. And I pick up with the reference to Caleb. Except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it. And to him and his sons I will give the land on which he has set foot, because he followed the Lord fully. That phrase seems to be repeated about Caleb, doesn't it? So what did it mean that Caleb followed the Lord fully? 12 men, all leaders, responsible men, were sent into the land. They went together, they saw the same things. They reported the same facts. As a matter of fact, scholars think that in that 40-day period, they may have covered 350 to 500 miles. They toured the land on foot. They saw it. They saw it all. They all saw it together. The difference is how they responded to what they saw. To better understand how Caleb got to this point and what Moses meant when he said Caleb followed the Lord fully, let's look back at Numbers 13 because it will open it up to us. Let's look at the commissioning so we see what they were tasked to do, and then what happened when they returned to the congregation and to Moses to report. Look with me at the beginning of Numbers 13. So we saw this earlier. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send out for yourself men so that they may spy out the land of Canaan. Note the next phrase, which I am going to give to the sons of Israel. Right before they went, God reminded them that the land was his to give. He was giving the land to them. You shall send a man from each of their father's tribes, everyone a leader among them. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran at the command of the Lord. All of the men were heads of the sons of Israel. Later in chapter 13, Moses said, what I want you to do is see what the land is like. Is it productive? See what the people are like. Specifically, Moses said, are they strong or are they weak? And the third thing was, see whether the cities are fortified or whether they're open. So, what's the land like? What are the people like? What are the cities like? That was their commission. Let's fast forward to Numbers 13:26 and look at the report that comes back from the 12. When they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Moses had said, if you can get some of the fruit, that would be good. They did. They brought it back. Catch these references to all the congregation. Everybody is anticipating this. Here come the 12. They're back in. They've got fruit of the land. That's a good thing. Now let's listen to what they say. They're going to give the facts. If you listen closely, there's just a bit of a negative spin. Just a bit. Thus they told him, that's Moses, and said, we went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. In other words, it's a good land. It's a productive land. Don't see milk and honey just as literally. There's not streams of milk and rivers of honey. It's just talking about how fruitful and productive the land is. So it's a good land, productive. Verse 28, nevertheless, here's your little, it's tweaked. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. Well, they were asked, tell me about the people. Are they strong or are they weak? What about their cities? They're reporting, the people who live there are strong, the cities are fortified and very large, and moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Wow. That's a reference to the Anakim, the giants in the land. These are big men. Big men here. Probably, and you're going to see more references to this, probably the one you would be most familiar with, who was probably a leftover from Anakim, the sons of Anak, who were Canaanites in the land, would have been the Philistine Goliath. When David comes along all that time later. I can't say that with certainty, but may well have been. Large men, big men. Verse 29, Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country. Now we've been through some of this. I hope your minds are thinking back. The Negev, if you come south of Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Hebron, and on south, you come into the Negev there. It's before the wilderness. So listen to the geographic areas. Amalek is in the Negev, and the Hittites and Jebusites and Amorites are in the hill country. That's going up the center, Jerusalem up through there. And the Canaanites are living by the sea. It's the Mediterranean, and by the side of the Jordan. They're spread in two different areas. So here's this report. We come into the land. Nevertheless, the people are strong. The cities are big. They're well fortified. Look at what happens next. Verse 30. Caleb speaks. But what does he have to do to be able to speak? Caleb quieted the people. That report had stirred a response among the people. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we shall surely overcome it. This is succinct, but he's talking to people who shouldn't have to have it all spelled out. Caleb is saying to them, hold on, calm down, nothing to be concerned about. Go up, move on, take possession, and conquer. Why? Because God has promised it, and He's with us. That changes everything. His perspective is different, we see. His counsel is not the same as the others. Listen now to the response of these other leaders who had been with Caleb. And as I thought about this, these 12 men, have you ever been on a trip with anybody for 40 days? You think you might bond a bit? Probably would. Checking the land out. Going to another city, looking at it, looking at the fortifications. You know, talking about it together, experiencing it together. Doesn't tell us. I'm reading between the lines. But I'm going to suggest to you there might have been kind of some closeness of that group. Now they come back to report, and they're going this way. 10 one way and 2 the other. Listen to what they say. We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us. This is the other 10 leaders. We can't do it. It's too much. They're too strong. So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. It'll chew us up, spit us out. This is major, folks. You don't know what is there. We saw it. They're too strong for us. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. Now, there's a little bit of hyperbole going on here. All the men? No. Some of them were. Verse 33. There also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, are part of the Nephilim, and we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight. These guys are so big, we're like grasshoppers next to them. That's how we see them, and that is how they see us, let us assure you. So in stark contrast to a man who stands before Israel and says, let's go. We'll overcome them. We need to take possession of the land. These leaders give up without a battle. They are denying the power of God to bring victory against what they see as overwhelming odds. What they saw, Caleb did not dispute. He saw the relatives of Anak. He saw the well-fortified cities. That's fact. Those are all there. But his perspective about that is different. These other men, to say we can't do it, denies the power of God who had delivered them to where they are at this moment. To concede defeat on an issue God calls us to do is to reject Him and to deny the reality of who He is. To concede defeat, there are lots of things we back away from. Lots of things we back away from, properly so. But this for them, and there are those things in our lives God calls us to do. When God has made it clear what we are to do, to back away from that is to reject Him and to deny the reality of who He is and His power. When that happens, perspective, my friends, is lost. Watch what happens here as we spill on over to Numbers 14, verse 1, down through verse 4. Then all the congregation, a few, no. The vote seems unanimous. Word spread throughout the congregation. They all lifted up their voices and cried. And the people wept that night. They're in despair. Now remember, we're talking about a man who followed God fully. That means everything works out just fine. There are no problems. Well, maybe you'd want to visit with Caleb as he's standing there, isolated from his own tribe, from his nation, because he's advocating a message nobody else wants to believe is true. They wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation, notice the words of Joshua, everybody said to them, "Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. We would rather have died there than be here today." I thought God redeemed them out of the bondage of the Egyptians to bring them to himself. No, we would rather have died before we got here. Or that we had died in the wilderness. That was our next choice. You know, some of us got to die. A whole generation of men wish the rest of us had. They don't want to be where they are. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Why is he going to kill us? Really? Really? That's what he said? No, that's what they saw. And when they saw what they saw, what happened? Fear overwhelmed them. When fear overwhelms us, we can lose our spiritual moorings. You think of a boat anchored to a dock. It's attached just fine. It's stable. You cut those ties and it drifts out. It's got no direction. That's exactly what happened here. The fear of what might be when they looked at what seems to be overwhelming odds is causing them to lose all spiritual moorings and to turn away from God. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? This is the same God who conquered Pharaoh and put his army under the water in the Red Sea. My goodness. But can you identify? You look at life sometimes and go, can't do it. I cannot do that. You can't ask me to do that. You don't know what that's going to mean to me. The pain will be too great. They're assuming things here. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Now, if that's not taking control of your own life, I don't know what is. You've all done it. So have I. I'm going to determine the direction in which I'm going to go. And I'll go that way. That's what they say. I'd rather be back in Egypt as a slave than be here and be headed toward that land because we won't make it. Look at the response of Moses and Aaron. They fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. They're just falling before the Lord. These are words of lament from the nation, and these are words of blasphemy from the nation as they reject their God.
They want to return to Egypt. God's plans take them into the land. No, we want to go back to Egypt. That would be better for us. If you're in the shoes of Caleb at this point, what do you do? The nation's collapsed under the weight of fear. Well, we learn that a man who follows God fully is not afraid to stand up, even when everything around him is falling away. Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. Why did they tear their clothes? They were grieving over the response of their brothers and sisters. Grieving over that. They tore their clothes to symbolize that. And then they spoke. They spoke to all the congregations of the sons of Israel, saying, "The land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey." What did he mean by "if the Lord is pleased with us"? Well, the Lord's not going to take us into the land and give it to us if we're rebelling against him. But if we walk with him in obedience to him, he'll give it to us. And it's a great land. And listen to the admonition. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land. They will be our prey. We will be the conquerors, not they. And he explains why. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. How many applications could you and I make of those words? The Lord is with us. Don't be afraid. That's Joshua's admonition and encouragement to them. Don't rebel against God. Don't cut the ties there that hold you and protect you. Wisdom and discernment is gone when we reject God and rebel against him. Don't expect to make good choices if you are rebelling against God. It will not happen. You're out of fellowship. God will not honor that. Okay. Well, a man who fully followed the Lord has spoken. He and Joshua. Let's see what the response is. Look with me at verse 10. "But all the congregation said to stone them with stones." Kill them. Kill them both. They don't want to hear it. "Don't talk to me about those things. I don't want to hear it." Kill them. Everybody. 2 million of them. Kill them. It's how much we accept what you say. You know how that feels? Lonely? Just a tad. Just a tad. But for God's intervention, they probably would have been killed. Look at the last sentence. "Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all of the sons of Israel." Sometimes we see that and it's a wonderful time. The glory of the Lord comes down. No, not here. If you read on, we're not going to do it today, but if you read on in Numbers 14, the glory of the Lord came down into the tabernacle. God was not pleased, as we know, with his people. He was not there for congratulatory remarks, and his mere presence stopped what was going on. How did God deal with the rebellion? Those 600,000 men, they all died, except two. Took 38 years of wandering around. They all died because of their rejection of him and their outright disobedience. You and I can expect our faith to be tested, and it'll be tested in the days ahead in ways that we've not experienced.
We see with Caleb an example of how to follow the Lord fully in the midst of severe circumstances. The standard for Caleb was the promise of God. He knew what God said. He believed it and trusted in Him, and he acted on that. That was Caleb. That sums him up. In our flesh, it is so easy to quickly forget the truth. When we do, the door is open for fear. When you look at what's ahead and you go, oh, and nothing wrong with your knees buckling. That happens to us, and it will happen to us. And we go, oh, not that. Well, if that's where the Lord has us, then we remember, yes, He will be with us. He'll never leave me. He'll never forsake me. He'll guide me through it. Be encouraged by the example of Caleb. Don't let fear undermine your spiritual moorings in life. Let's flip back to Joshua 14. We're not quite done with Caleb. There's more of this man that we're about to see as he asked Joshua for his portion of the land. This is 45 years after the events we've just been talking about. Caleb is still following the Lord fully. Let's look at it. Verse 10. Now behold, Caleb says, the Lord has let me live just as He spoke these 45 years from that time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am 85 years old today. Caleb is saying that the Lord's let me live just as He spoke. He recognizes that the fact that he got to be alive at 85 was because the Lord allowed it. Isn't that true for all of us, regardless of age? Listen to what he says beyond that. Verse 11. Some of you will smile at this. I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now for going out and for coming in. You look at that and go, now wait a minute. He was 40, now he's 85. Not so sure about that. I think what he's saying is he's got strength to do what God will ask him to do. It was not going to be his strength when he was 40 that would accomplish anything. He had enough strength to step out and go. God is the one who will deliver. He says the same thing today. I've still got strength, just like I did then, to go out and to come in, to go to war. But he's not counting on his strength conquering the enemy. Look now at verse 12. Now then, here's what this 85-year-old man says. Give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there, with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. At 85, Caleb wanted to accomplish what the Lord had for him. And he looks, he says, I'm entitled to be first here. Got my hand up, I'm speaking out, Joshua, because of what Moses promised. And by the way, that portion up there at Hebron, where the Anakim have been reported, that's what I'd like. I want where the giants are in the land. Give me the hardest section, Joshua, because perhaps the Lord will be with me. As he's saying there, I don't know if he'll be with me. No. He's confident the Lord will be with him as long as he's obedient to the Lord. And he will drive them out as the Lord has ordained it, as the Lord has spoken. I want to be at 85 conquering what God has for me to conquer, Caleb. Caleb says. I want it fulfilled because I know Yahweh will be with me and he will drive them out. Can I suggest to you that a man or woman who follows God fully does not seek the easy path in later years? Following God fully does not recognize retirement. There's no retirement from that. In the world in which we live, if you live long enough, you'll see the battles don't stop with age. Talk to somebody who's a little older if you doubt that. There will always be struggles. We live in a fallen world. The circumstances of our lives will change. The battles will change. But they will always be there. We'll face challenges as long as God gives us breath to live. We'll face them. And the pull will be to turn back and say, not me. You're looking at the wrong guy. That's too much. Question is whether that's where God wants us. If that's where God wants us, then following him fully means we trust him. We put our complete confidence in his word and we move out, counting on him to do again for us what he has done in the past. Victory is always found when the Lord is with us. As Caleb proved, God is able to give victory even when the opposition is giant-sized. You haven't seen how big the obstacles are that I face, you might say. Caleb stands for the proposition that even the giant-sized, not an issue, if that's what God is calling you to do. And that man embraced them. God blessed Caleb. God was pleased with the faithfulness of his servant. He blessed him with the very first portion of the land distributed. Look with me now at verses 13 and 14 and verse 15. So Joshua blessed him. Can you see the scene? Caleb has spoken. They've got this history. Joshua knows it. What a joy it must have been for him to be able to bless Caleb and give him what he wanted. And he gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. This is what you get, Caleb, from the Lord, just what you've asked. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. Follow God fully and reap his blessing. Doesn't mean your bank account will overflow, but it means you will have the blessing of God now and in the days ahead. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, for Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. The name of the place got changed. The land had rest. The battles, the big battles, are over. More to fight if they're to take all the land. But the big battles are over. The land needed rest so the people of Israel could occupy it, so it could be distributed among the tribes. God had given the victory. He now gives the peace necessary for the distribution. Caleb's inheritance was within that part of the land that would shortly be awarded to Judah. What an example for Judah and for the rest of the nation it had for Caleb to be up there in front of them. He had demonstrated what it meant to follow God fully in the early years of his adulthood when he was 40. But in his later years, it was no different. He continued to walk the same path. He maintained his relationship with his God. Caleb finished well. May I say that all who follow the Lord fully will finish well. Caleb gave us the pattern. Trust in the promise of God. Trust in what God says in his word. And then in your individual circumstances, take action based upon what he's called you to do in your life, in your circumstances. They won't be the 1940s and the Ten Boom family. They won't likely be, even as a grandmother, called to raise three little kids when you're well past the age of strength to do that. But whatever it is that God is calling you to do and putting on your heart, you do when you follow God fully, because you realize he will provide in that, and glory will come to him through you. Don't turn away from the call. The blessing of God is for those who follow him fully. Whether you're 85 or 40 or 15, let's be men and women here today about whom it could be said that they followed God fully. What a great compliment to Caleb, but what a deserving recognition. A man of God, he followed God fully. Pray with me that God may cause that desire to permeate our hearts. Father, as we look at the example of Caleb, I just think how many here in this room testify to me of the truth of following you fully. None of us is perfect, but what a privilege it is, Father, to know those whose lives are committed to you and who follow you in whatever circumstances you place them. Thank you for that. Thank you for loving us enough to give us the ability to know you and have the confidence that you will provide for us. You provide for us, Father, as we've seen today, to give us life that is everlasting and eternal. But we have it now. Help us in our new life to follow you fully, so that we may bear the same marks as Caleb, Father. Not that we came an easy path, but the path that we came was one in which we followed you fully. I pray that for each of us today, in Jesus' name.
I definitely want to encourage you to have confidence and boldness even as we sing these songs. Please stand.